universe.
My name, of course, is Warren Johnson.
Well, super nerdy pet peeve of mine, nitpicky. I don't think he should have been hopping over the top rope like a parkour champion.
You got me mad now.
What is your name?
As always, with my man, Pots and Pans, Nick Facone.
That's me.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
You know, you got a back nickel.
I don't really know us like you think that you do.
I'm Ryan Isley.
What is he doing?
Oh, my God. Is he the third man?
He's the third man.
What the hell is going on here?
Straight Shooters is, the number one show on Wildfire Radio.
I'm feeling good.
No sleep, no food, no nothing. Maniacism.
Well, all the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Hal.
Sorry.
What actually happened on the show? Nothing.
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
What's up, ladies and gentlemen out there in internet land? My name is Ron Johnson, and joined as always for my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Facone, Philly Voice, and Philly Influencer. And you are listening to episode 224 of The Straight Shooters, that is available on all the podcast platforms you can possibly think of, even SoundCloud and Spotify and iHeartRadio, all those different places where you can rate, review, subscribe to us. Give us good reviews. We like good reviews. We like positive feedback. Or we also like constructive criticism as well. But this is episode 224 of that podcast. And before I get into what we're going to talk about tonight on this here episode, the first time in 2 weeks we've been back, obviously. I know you've missed us. We took a week break because, you know, I had some business to attend to, which I'll discuss in a little bit. But before I get into all of that, let me check in with my good brother, my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Facone. How are you doing tonight, my good brother?
I'm doing good. This is the first installment of the Straight Shooters from my new Adobe, my humble abode. Not Adobe.
Adobe? You're thinking too much about Photoshop. And
I must be.
Here.
My new humble abode. And a week ago, because... I had moved in here and I didn't have TV or internet for 4 days. So if you think it's impossible to survive in 2020 without TV or internet for 4 days, you're probably right, because I almost went insane. You know, luckily I had work. So at work I was able to, you know, get on the Twitter machine and all that stuff. And I still had my phone, so I had to use my data instead of connect to Wi-Fi and all that. So, you know, it was crazy. It's been a long time since I've had a deal with, you know, being practically off the face of the earth with that stuff. So, still got a lot to do around here. But you know, things are settling down. I'm here and I'm happy.
That's good, man. We're recording this on a Friday night. We just finished SmackDown. The Super SmackDown, as they called it.
That's right.
And they never really explored. They kind of did, but it's like, why is it called, before the show? It's like, why is it called Super SmackDown? And even though I work for an NFL team, I still didn't get it until like halfway through the show. Like, oh, because it's the Super Bowl this weekend, so it's just Super SmackDown. Even though nothing is really different, they just put Super over the logo as if that was supposed to like. And I think, look, the Super Bowl is on Fox this year. SmackDown is on Fox. That was like the kind of tie-in. I get that they had to do something, but okay.
Nothing really. They just had the word super in front of anything to try and make it feel special. You got superstars and sure. Super Showdown and all that. It's
don't remind me. But the Super SmackDown logo kind of gave me some Street Fighter 2 Turbo vibes. I don't know if you was feeling the same thing.
You would know more than me, and I know you're a big Street Fighter guy. So
actually, I'm a big Mortal Kombat guy, but I do remember playing Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo back in the day.
We had that. You and our former producer Taylor, right, had a kind
and,
of a,
and Brian mini, Isley
and Brian too.
Yeah, he was a Street Fighter guy. I was a man on an island, repping Mortal Kombat.
Meanwhile, I was just sitting back because I didn't play any of those games.
You were definitely playing WrestleMania, Super WrestleMania.
That's
something
right.
Like that.
That's right. played all the wrestling games, but no fighting games. Go figure.
I mean, it had some fighting game elements. I mean, Super WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, No Mercy.
Well, I'm saying, like, you know, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, like, none of those types of
Gotcha. Speaking of, we should do an episode about wrestling video games at some point.
We really should, though,
because I feel like that could be a fun discussion.
That reminds me, earlier today, I kind of tagged you on a video of was in No Mercy with Edge and the spear when they cut to the audience. And I know you kind of had a few tweets about that during the Royal Rumble, where WWE messed up the camera cuts again, which they're starting to become, you know, pretty famous for. You know, it's not the first time, and it probably won't be the last time, but, man, they have to get better.
We'll discuss that in more detail, in greater detail, on the show, because we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, we haven't been here in a couple weeks. A lot has happened, including, holy hell, the Royal Rumble happened. So we're not going to really recap the show, but that happened, and it was actually, real quick recap, I thought both Royal Rumbles were very good. I thought the men's Royal Rumble was exceptionally good. And I know we talked about a couple weeks ago, like, the Royal Rumble had kind of lost its luster over the last decade or so. But they've gotten it pretty good and pretty right the last couple years.
Yeah, especially when it comes to the winners. And, you know, I had a good – I agree with you. I had a – you know, I watched the men's Rumble. A lot of people – it was very polarizing with the whole Brock Lesnar thing, especially, like, the first half of the Rumble. But I think overall it was awesome. Good stories throughout the match. And I thought it was pretty good too.
Yeah, and the reason why we did not have a show last week because I was in Orlando for the Pro Bowl.
Did you go to NXT?
I was going to say I did not make my way to Winter Park for NXT. I did not make my way to Full Sail. Honestly, I was extremely busy down there. we kind of had a game plan of what we wanted to do while we were there, and still was even busier than I expected. Even though I knew what I wanted to do. But so I didn't get a chance to make my way to, even if I really wanted to, I just didn't have the time to really do it. So, you know, no NXT for me. And so sorry, NXT, maybe next time. I don't know if there is next time. But we got a lot to talk about because a lot of stuff happened coming out of this World Rumble. We got accusations of racism from WWE, which is nothing new, but we'll talk about the latest accusation of racism or at least problematic representation in WWE or problematic depictions of people of color in WWE. This latest accusation, we'll address that. We'll talk about Naomi, and they did a big angle with her tonight in Bayley, so it looks like she's next in line for a SmackDown Women's Championship match. We'll talk about AEW, I guess. You know, I don't know. What's it really talk about AEW? I just threw them out there. But
yeah, they're a thing. You know, what sucks for me is the last 2 weeks I haven't really been able to watch either AEW or NXT. I kind of just scroll through them, you know, seeing the main points. Haven't been on social media that much. I'm waiting for things to die down here a little bit so I can get back to my routine and everything and watching both NXT, AEW, and then Raw, SmackDown, or whatever. And the huge return at the Royal Rumble of Edge. So we got to talk about that as well.
Yes, we got to talk about WWE's production. That's what I was missing there. WWE's production, we will talk about that. But before we talk about that, we got to talk about the big shakeup that happened in WWE, the corporate shakeup that happened in WWE. And that...
since stock prices were already going down, I think. Technically before this shakeup was made. Yeah, WWE stock not doing too hot.
But that was in response to WWE pretty much ousting their co-presidents of the company, George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, who had both been around for a long time.
Yeah,
and both,
I think he's at 10 years, 10 plus years.
Yeah, and they are both on the board of directors, and they're both gone. And that's, I mean, from an on-screen standpoint, that's not really a big deal. They didn't really have say in, we don't think at least, in who was going over and what the storylines were. But from a business standpoint, that's a big deal. Anytime a company gets rid of two, you know, the co-presidents, you know, it'd be one president or co-presidents in this instance. Anytime somebody is ousted at that level, and, you know, obviously Vince McMahon is the end-all be-all WWE. We all know he's at the top of the hierarchy, so to speak. And nothing really gets past the buck stops with him. Nothing really gets past him. But if you're a president in that company, you obviously hold sway and you obviously have his ear. So, you know, who knows what exactly happened as to why they were ousted. But it's a pretty big deal that it happened. And a lot of the stories that I've seen, at least, you know, talked about the fact that WWE is expecting lower revenue, or at least I don't know the exact verbiage, but they're not expected to make as much money in that fourth quarter of 2019 as they thought, pretty much.
Yeah, that's, it might even be half that, what they were projected, or less than half, something like that. So I think, and I'm just paraphrasing here without it in front of me, I think they were expecting upwards of like $300 million in revenue or something like that. But the actual projection is going to be like 100 in the 170 area or something like that. So that's a pretty big drop from what they're expecting. If it was in the 300 area down to like the 170, 180 area. And again, it could that could be a margin of error that I'm citing, but that's a lot. That's a lot. So and I think this came down, we're recording this on a Friday night, so I think it came down on Thursday, either Thursday afternoon or Thursday night. So I was kind of taken aback by it a little bit, because I had started hearing more like their names more often on these like conference calls and these you know, events that they're speaking at, that these co-presidents, and now like they're ousted, you know, right before the XFL run. So that's interesting too. I don't think they really had anything to do with the XFL, but you know, it's just interesting timing on these things.
Yeah, and of course, as a result of that, the stock price dropped significantly, apparently. And yeah, so I mean, what does this mean going forward? I mean, without being in the building and knowing, you know, how the inner workings go, not totally sure. I mean, I would assume that the presidents had say over the business, a lot of the business aspects. They at least reported to Vince McMahon in that they were trying to probably secure television deals and overseas deals and whatnot. And now there's going to be new people doing that. But at the end of the day, nothing really changes about how they really run things unless Vince McMahon isn't all of a sudden making those decisions. Like, I think still Vince McMahon is still going to be, as he is on screen with what happens in the on-screen product, it's kind of the same in the business aspect. Maybe, you know, somebody may bring a new approach to him, but I still think he kind of wants, maybe if he didn't like the way things were running with these two people, maybe he'll change his philosophies on things and is open to new, you know, ways of doing things. But at the end of the day, the buck still stops with him, as it always has been. And I don't really see, at least from a fan standpoint, what's going to change from a business standpoint. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a noticeable change from what our eyes can see. But, you know, if you're in the, on the inside, you might notice it right away. So
yeah, I agree with that. I don't think we'll see, like, creative changes. You know, we're not going to see certain wrestlers be pushed starting on Monday night, you know, and Friday night and on NXT. But I do think, you know, definitely on the business side, maybe, hopefully, they can improve this damn WWE network for Apple TV, that where their newest update completely sucks, and it's borderline unusable on Apple TV right now. And I know that wasn't, you know, the big picture with George Barrios and all that, but, man, can you get someone to fix this WWE network app? Because I'm not feeling too hot about it. I haven't been on it in a while. And then when I went on it for the Royal Rumble, it was just ridiculous, crashing here. And I didn't have that problem before, so I don't know. Maybe it's not even related to this, but that was my first instinct, because George Barrios was all about WWE Network and all this and all that and the technology behind it, and he was at the forefront of it almost. So maybe now that he's gone, maybe they'll improve something there. I don't
know. Yeah, time will have to tell on that. You know, whether anything changes really in WWE, we just don't know. But let's talk about a more serious issue that's been bandied about in WWE, or at least in our discussions in WWE in the recent past, and that is how they kind of depict people of color on their television shows. And this came up recently because Bruce Mitchell, and I even saw a Bruce Mitchell of PW Torch, by the way, and I saw a story on Fansided that kind of talked about, I didn't read the story necessarily, I saw the headline, but I saw Bruce Mitchell's tweets, and that they essentially didn't like how people of color were depicted in the Men's Royal Rumble, and that Brock Lesnar, obviously everybody knows, was the first guy out, and he eliminated pretty much the first, 13 guys, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that.
He eliminated everyone up until Ricochet. So 14 guys. And of those guys, somebody counted, I think, said 53% of them were people of color. Which is like, okay, like, and that, I don't know. To me, watching that match live, I never once thought, like, oh, this is this is racist. Like, he's eliminating all the people of color. When literally, when somebody did the math, I think it was 53%. That was half the people. Like, that meant the other half were white. Like,
yeah.
So the first three people he eliminated, the first four, unless John, pretty sure John Morrison's white, right? Unless I'm wrong. Unless I'm, you know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But Elias, Eric Rowan, Robert Roode, he tossed them out unceremoniously. John Morrison, unceremoniously, boom, gone, get out of here. Not even a chance in hell at Brock Lesnar. Things didn't get interesting until Kofi Kingston showed up, who is for sure a person of color. Next out, Rey Mysterio, also very interesting. Big E. Those three actually got significant time with Brock, put him down a little bit, got some offense in on him. So would you rather have them been later in the – I mean, they could have been later in the match, I guess. But it made sense for those three guys at that spot because they all had a history with Brock Lesnar. That's how I saw it, at least live.
Right, and I agree with you. And I think that's what a lot of people where a lot of people were missing Bruce Mitchell's, I think, overall point, because everything made sense. You know, like the history that they had with Brock, and okay, that this in storyline makes sense, all the sense in the world. But I think it highlighted and what he was trying to say didn't really do a great job with it because. You know, you kind of peruse his timeline. He's not explaining it as well as I think he wants to. And I'm not even sure he can. But I think his overall point was not that they shouldn't have been in that spot. And even though everything did make sense, that was fine. But the fact that the whole booking surrounding them of why they had an issue with Brock in the first place. And then they had, like, why did Kofi have to lose the title to Brock Lesnar in 2 seconds on the first Friday night SmackDown? There's a bigger problem than that. Like, even though Kofi had the title and he had a 6-month reign or something like that, it should have been booked better in a way. Like, Kofi Kingston should have been booked better. And I think that was his overall point. Same with Rey Mysterio, maybe not so much. Big E made sense. He was helping out his buddy Kofi. But Big E could be a huge star right now if he was booked differently. And I know the New Day is still hot 5-6 years down the after they started. But I think just Bruce's main point, and I don't pay to listen to PW Torch Audio. I didn't listen to what he said on his show after the Royal Rumble or anything like that. I just see what he's writing on Twitter and all that and how – I think his explanation pretty much comes up with the fact that his main problem wasn't that it didn't make sense and the order, but it was like the fact that Kofi had an issue with Brock even to begin with, because that never should have happened type of thing. So that's where I think he was going with it. Even though Brock is a freak of nature, like even compared to Big E, who's huge, you know, Brock is a monster. So I understand like why they book Brock the way they do, but you know, the Royal Rumble, there was a different feel to it. It was the first time they had kind of done this story with the champion in it who wasn't even defending the title, and Brock just kind of like eliminating guys, boom, 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 and he was just kind of chilling by himself for a long time. You had Keith Lee in there that gave him a little run. I think that Keith Lee was actually the first person. I don't remember if – I guess he was – I can't remember if he was before or after off the top of my head.
Before, like, or after who?
Kofi after Mysterio. It was after.
I got the list in front of me right now. It was Big E, then Cesaro, okay, who got unceremoniously dumped. Yeah. Shelton Benjamin had a little moment, a Minnesota moment before he got dumped. Shinsuke immediately dumped out. MVP, which was cool. He had the Black Panther gear on. I thought that was cool. But he got thrown out, boom, right away. And then Keith Lee came out. And they had a moment where it was like, Brock was like, who in the hell is this dude? Like, big boy here.
And then when he got knocked down, his eyes, like, big a wide. Like, to me, that put Keith Lee over even more.
Right.
I think that, I don't want to say, WWE's, you know, there should be no criticism because of that. It was a good moment for Keith Lee, but no, there's something there that, You can see with your eyes that you might not have thought watching it live, because I didn't think so either. But I just think Bruce's overall point was basically how even though these guys had issues with Brock, it shouldn't have been like that.
By the way, the person, you know, Drew McIntyre technically eliminated Brock, but Ricochet had a hand in that.
Right, yeah.
Also a person of color.
Yep.
And let's not forget Roman Reigns is not white. He's a person of color, and he's a pretty much the top guy in WWE. But that does not absolve WWE from there is a or has been a they've had issues with that in the past, and I think they still do to a certain extent because we've talked about this in the past where the top of the card is still the long-haired, a lot of times the long-haired white guys who we've seen for years and years and years, and I don't know if people are still into that look or that aesthetic anymore in 2019 or now 2020. Drew McIntyre is the latest guy to be in that spot. Nothing against him. He is super talented. Obviously, he deserves to be in that spot. He's worked his butt off for years and years and years, went left WWE, came back, and worked his way into the spot. So I'm not knocking him at all. It's just WWE's, it just seems kind of familiar for WWE to do it. And even with the women, you look at, you know, this kind of bleeds into the comments, I was, you know, discussion I wanted to have about Naomi, and that when she came out in the Women's Rumble, she came out with her natural hair out and this fro, and, you know, she usually doesn't have that hair. So it came out, I was like, whoa, look at that. And guess what? People who didn't watch wrestling, i.e. black women, don't normally watch wrestling or haven't watched wrestling in years, saw Naomi, was like, I don't know who that is. That was the first thing they said. I don't know who that is.
Yep.
And I haven't watched wrestling in years, which WWE, that's an indictment on you and the wrestling business as a whole. But I like her just because of her hair and her look and her aesthetic and how she is. It's like, yeah, WWE, you're going to have a whole new audience if you just started putting more people to look like Naomi at the top of the card and presenting them. You don't have to, you know, and the problem is when you have people, when WWE gets a hold of somebody who wants to be pro-black or pro-anything, they become a heel. And they become like militant. So if you're pro-black, yeah, you're the nation domination. Right. And they were militant, angry black men. They don't have to be that. You know, the antithesis of that is a New Day. They're pro-black and they're not militant and angry and stuff like that. And I think that was by design on their part. But they've incorporated pro-blackness in their work, in their act. And you know, they sometimes had their gear, might have the kente cloths in their gear and stuff like that. So they've done that. They've been good at doing that for now, like you said, 5-6 years, but you need more of that. And if Naomi, from one appearance, she didn't even win the match, and really Bianca Belair had a better showing.
Yeah,
she made like 6-7 people. She looked great, she was strong, boom, the whole nine, and she is destined to do great things, or you hope destined to do great things in WWE, or excuse me, anywhere in wrestling for that matter, because she's super athletic, super talented. But just from walking to the ring, Naomi, people were like, who is that? Like, she got way more attention than any other wrestler, even more than Charlotte, and she won the damn thing.
Right.
And it just goes to show, like, yo, y'all need, there are, we've had this discussion before, and what's cool and what's hip in 2020, and, you know, when we had the discussion, it was 2019 still. What's cool and what's hip today? Is it another, you know, just another white woman that we've had for years and years? No offense to white people, obviously. Like blonde white woman like Charlotte, even though Becky Lynch isn't blonde, she's a redhead or orange, red, orange. What color is her hair now?
Fiery.
But it's another woman just like that, or maybe you can get a Naomi in there with the natural hair, and you can open up a whole new audience to especially women of color, who I saw a bunch of tweets that from women that said, I haven't watched wrestling in years. I don't know who she is, but I'm rooting for her. Hell, Wendy Williams mentioned Naomi on her show. And yeah, people may have their misgivings about Wendy Williams and her career or whatever. Whatever you may think about Wendy Williams aside, the fact that she has a nationally telecasted show daily with a huge audience of all different, you know, creeds and genders, and who most of them probably don't watch wrestling as well. And she was like, yo, I want to know who this is. I want to check out more of her. That should be evidence enough. Yo, y'all got something here. Like, keep doing this. Keep this track record. It ain't perfect. They'll probably find a way to mess it up in the long run anyway. But it looks like they are taking notice because they are putting her in a – it looks like they're putting her in a title program with Bayley. And we'll see how that go. But Naomi, more power to you. I love the hair. I love the aesthetic. It's not just about blackness, neither. It's about being who you naturally are. That's really a big message for that, too. I mean, for us, for black people, hair is very important, especially our natural hair. And, you know, we don't like people touch our hair and mess with our hair and mess it up. It's very important to us. Probably more important than any other race or culture going on. And, you know, I'm sure other cultures and races that probably say otherwise, but from what that's what I see at least. It's very important to us. I know that much. But it's not just about Black people. It's also about, like I said, being your natural, true self. That's a, and that if you, even if you don't want to go the pro Black route, you can go to pro, you know the other route, and like I said, being happy with yourself and being who you are, not being afraid that, you know, that you can go the pro natural beauty route, so to speak. And you got something there with Naomi, and she's already, I mean, we ain't got to talk about her physical talent. She's arguably the most athletic woman on the roster. She's already been a champion multiple times. First winner of the women's battle royal WrestleMania. I mean, she's got she's already been there, done that. As far as you know, you can put her in that spot and she can excel. Do it again. Like, why not? She's great. Like, she's got a great personality, great smile. I don't see why that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, and I think you said it perfectly. We're talking about we kind of see we've been seeing the same type of person at the top of the card for the longest time. The white guy with the long stringy hair. It's like, okay, I think in 2020, especially with two world champions, two male world champions, two female world champions, it should be easier than ever to get diversity at the top of the card. It should be easier than ever if you're WWE when you have that global exposure and the two world champions for each, like, and it's just not happening. And I have no clue why. And when it does happen, and this is Kofi notwithstanding, because I think me and you agree, we enjoyed his reign. We didn't think it was as boring as some other people thought. The way it ended kind of sucked. But when they do put, you know, even the mid-card titles on these people of color like Nakamura or whatever, they're not looked at as important. You know, the way Brock Lesnar is looked at as important, the way The Fiend, Bray Wyatt's looked at as important. So that's also that has everything to do with story. It has everything to do with how they build these stars. And they just keep shooting themselves in the foot when it comes to taking advantage of these opportunities. So hopefully we saw tonight on SmackDown, you said it with Naomi and Bayley kind of coming together, and hopefully that kicks off a program. Maybe we'll see the blow off at WrestleMania, and hope, you know, that would be a great moment for Naomi, but time will tell. We don't know where that story is going yet. That could be done by the next pay-per-view, because I still think they have two left before WrestleMania. So, you know, that's a WWE problem. You know, they just have not found the formula to let people of color succeed at the top of their card, and I just don't understand why. It's so hard.
Yeah, it's like you said, diversity. And WWE's had issues with this before. Like I said, this ain't new. We've talked about it. And that how not only is it the diversity at the top, it's also, you know, the ones that do put there, how did they depict them? Yeah. You know, you got the angry Black guy or the silly Black guy, or you got, let's not get even started how they depicted Asians over the years, or even Mexicans for that matter. You know, you got, for every Eddie Guerrero, there's a Mexicals, right, you know, when they're riding out on Juan Deers and stuff like that. So, you know, for every Shinsuke, there's, was it Kenzo Suzuki,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Or even Mr. Fuji, throwing salt in people's eyes and stuff like that. Come on. So yeah, you got Yokozuna, who's Samoan, depicting a Japanese person, you know, stuff like that. So there have been issues with WWE in race in the past, and up until this day, I just don't think the Royal Rumble, the men's Royal Rumble in particular, was the thing to latch on to and be like, see, this was it.
Right. It's not like a tipping point, because I think,
right,
you know, I think maybe we've even already reached the tipping point, and then we got past it. And then I think everyone was just like, it's never going to change. So they kind of like, and I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about like white people, whatever. They just didn't think that anything was going to change. So we just kind of accept it. And that's, I don't want to say it's our fault too, as a wrestling fan, but you know, that's, we just kind of resigned ourselves to the fact that it's going to be like this when it doesn't have to be. And WWE, of all companies, the global phenomenon it is, should be the one kind of steering that diversity the way they are, especially with two, now three brands. You know, is NXT, Keith Lee has to, like, I thought after Survivor Series, Keith Lee was going to be the guy, the face of NXT going into 2020 and maybe for the whole year of 2020. And I don't even know if that's going to happen, but I think it should. I still think it should. They need to make him the guy in NXT if they want that brand to flourish the way it can. Because I think if they even move him to like Raw or SmackDown and think that's an improvement for him, they're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, again, time will tell. Hopefully they can continue to get it together. They're not great at it now, but let's get it together. Let's keep it going, WWE, even though you're not really great at it now.
See, I think they did a good job with Brock in that Rumble match because when Drew McIntyre eliminated him, that crowd went nuts.
Right.
So it could have been anybody. It could have been anybody.
Right. I thought they did a great job. And I know when it was happening, I was like, oh, boy, how long is this going to last? And then when like, the payoff happened, I was like, you know what? That was brilliant. It was actually really great. And that payoff was great. And, you know, it was great because they paid it off. It was great because there was a satisfying conclusion. There was a reason to all of it. And when you look at the grand scheme of things and how the match played out in totality, it was really, really well done. And like you said, you know, those first, I would have preferred that they not have put John Morrison in that spot since he just came back. Right. I would have preferred that they not put certain people in that spot in certain spots. Like maybe put The Miz in that first 10 instead of after Drew McIntyre eliminates him. Like The Miz is pretty much bulletproof at this point. He can afford to get immediately just tossed out right away. You know, obviously you don't want to put Edge in there, but you know it's tough to put MVP in there because he's a legend pretty much, and he just gets tossed out right away. You know, it's only 30 spots. Do you put Shorty G in one of those spots? I mean, like they don't seem to really be caring for what he's doing right now. They just lost to Sheamus again here at the night on SmackDown. So it's like maybe you could have not done. Like I said, the only person I probably would have done was maybe John Morrison, because he just came back. Maybe switched him and Miz. But other than that, I thought the stuff with Kofi and Ray and Big E was some of the best points of the time he was out there. Like, when he did the whole thing, when he jumped off Kofi to hit Rey Mysterio, like, that was lit. Yeah. Like, that was an awesome sequence. So, and it made sense story-wise. When was the last time we saw, like, actual stories being played out in the Rumble, like, good ones? Like, even when Brock got eliminated, Drew McIntyre kept his eyes on him the entire time, and the fans were chanting, nah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
You had the Edge, Randy Orton stuff, which played into the next night on Raw, and then it was just so much good stuff in there, I thought, that, you know, it's like, and I didn't, in my first mind, and I was watching it with my girlfriend, who would have been the first person to be like, oh, I don't like this, this don't feel right. She would have been the first person to say that, and she said nothing. She was into it just like I was, and then coagulate at that point, it's like, oh, there's 50, half and half people of color, people that were white. It's like, it's probably a good thing that in the span of 14, 15 people, half of them were the people of color. Like, yeah, they got all tossed out by Brock Lesnar, but it's probably good that, you know, there's at least some type of representation. If they were all white, what would that say about WWE? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that would have been better for WWE, is that the first 15 guys in the Royal Rumble were all white.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have been better.
Yeah, but that would have been pointed out too. It'd be like, it wouldn't have been the fact that Brock was eliminating him, it would have been the fact that they were just white. So you're right. And yeah, Bobby Lashley and Rusev were taken out of the match for whatever reason. You know, that I don't think really played into anything. I thought it was curious because Michael Cole has said it like right before the match started. I don't even know if they did anything on Raw. Like,
I don't remember.
Just trying to remember. So I don't know if anything behind the scenes is going on with that. It was just weird.
Because I was sure Rusev was going to eliminate Bobby Lashley.
Yeah. And that would have been another story to play out in the Rumble. And
right.
You had mentioned earlier, hey, WWE's gotten the Rumble right the last few years in terms of the winner, but there's not been those stories within the context of the Rumble match itself. And then this one, you know, I think both of them, the women's and the men's, had some stories play out pretty well compared to previous years.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The stories have been really, really well done.
I'm all about the stories. Like,
wrestling. That's some of the best parts about the Royal Rumble and like wrestling in general. Good quality storytelling. Because the in-ring action in the Royal Rumble, I mean, really the payoff is throwing somebody over the top rope. The in-between stuff is what really matters. And as far as the story, not really the action, it's really the story that's going on, that's being told in that match. There was a great story that happened, though, in that match. The return of WWE Hall of Famer Edge after 9 years after he had to retire, forced to retire because of neck injuries. He came back and looked better than ever, as far as, you know, shape-wise, at least. And yeah. I love that he looked grizzled and he looked like a veteran, like he had the gray in his beard, like he'd been through some stuff.
I love that look on his face where he was like, wow, like, is this really happening?
I love that. He's back out there, and but he hits the ring, and then WWE, for whatever reason, cut away to show more fan shots as he hits his first spear. And I stand corrected. It wasn't his first spear in a decade, because apparently, I already forgot about this, he speared Elias at SummerSlam last year.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, didn't even remember that. Like,
that's when everyone was like, oh, so he did a spear. He got physical. Could something be happening?
Look, I forgot all about that.
And then they forgot all about it because they might have shown it on TV, but after that, there was no mention of it. So I forgot about it, too. I completely forgot about it. So definitely wasn't a big SummerSlam moment if we forgot about it already.
And who cares? It was like a throwaway segment on SummerSlam.
But they did show the spear, though, which is crazy. They showed it at SummerSlam, but they did not show it at Royal Rumble.
They didn't show it at Royal Rumble. And why? Because WWE, here's the thing about WWE. They are good from the standpoint that you can tell it's a professionally run operation. They know what they're doing. They're not necessarily bad at their jobs. It's just their style is trash.
It's
the way they want to shoot wrestling, the way they think it should be shot, is trash. It's like, I don't know how I can relate that to something else. Like, you're good at what you do, but the style in which you do it sucks. Like, does that make sense? Like, I don't know if that
makes
sense.
I know exactly what you mean.
But it's like, I gotta give WWE credit because they're not necessarily bad at what they do from a standpoint of like technique. Like, you don't ever see a WWE show where the sound quality is bad or where they don't get good shots. It's just they switch to a bunch of shots all the time. That's my issue with WWE. On top of many others.
I kind of compare it to, like, I love baseball. It's like my number one sport that I love. And I kind of compare it to that where you just keep getting base hits off bunts down the third baseline.
Yeah.
And you score and you win the game that way. That's not like... That's not something I enjoy. Well, that's not why I watch baseball. You know, like these
the way they shoot
things in WWE is not the reason why I watch it. It might start being the reason why I don't watch it.
But to back up your analogy, teams could win playing, like, less than this instance, it'd be like small ball in baseball.
Yeah.
Bunts, trying to manufacture some runs. It ain't exciting. And you could be good. You can win.
Yep.
But it ain't exciting to watch.
Nope.
This is how I equate WWE's style of production. And that, for whatever reason, and I know a lot of people have been pinning the blame on Kevin Dunn. We don't know if Kevin Dunn is actually directing and telling people which camera to go to next. But whoever developed the style, whether it's Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon, or whoever, somebody developed the style and somebody has executed every television show. So they have this terrible thing of quick cuts, rapidly quick cut. I mean, cuts, shots rarely last longer than like 5 seconds in WWE. And that's a long time on WWE TV. If a shot lasts 2 seconds, it's like, whoa, they let that shot sink in and let it really sink in. Like, it's boom, boom, boom. I just watched a show tonight where Roman Reigns was doing the 10 clotheslines of Baron Corbin, I believe it was. And on every clothesline, they cut to a different shot. And it's like, that's unnecessary. And it bit him in the butt during Edge's entrance. But even before he hit the ring, they cut like 20 times. They cut so much you didn't even really get to see him that much. They were trying to get the crowd reactions, which they got the one time. Like, the one time it really worked, from what I remember, is when The Undertaker lost at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And as soon as he lost, as soon as the three count happened, they tried to get in crowd shots. Yep. That made perfect sense because nothing was happening in the ring.
Exactly.
But for whatever reason, they've used that at all times, during matches, during entrances. It's like, bruh, I just want nothing is more important than the people who are acting out what's going on right now. That's like a football game cutting away mid-play to show the crowd getting hyped. That, you know, let's say Tyreek Hill.
Jordan Hail Mary.
Right. Tyreek Hill in the Super Bowl catches a bubble screen and takes it 90. WWE, during the play, would cut away to show Chiefs fans getting up out their seats. Like, oh, yes. Like, go, Tyreek, go. They would cut away during the play. It's like, bruh, I want to see Tyreek run. I want to see Patrick Mahomes throw this bomb. Like, I want to see Mostert run. Like, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see the fans during what's happening.
Right.
And WWE, y'all got to understand, like, when Edge is making his entrance, all your shots should focus on him. You can get crowd shots later.
Right.
But focus on him first of all. We haven't seen him in a wrestling capacity in 9 years. This is it. Like, it's about him. Instead, we got, like, 30 cuts of fans. And then they cut away from the spear. When, like, you know, when he's getting into the ring, why would you cut away? What possessed you to do that? But that's their style. And it doesn't make any sense. You don't have to do all the quick cuts on everything. It's annoying. And I've been complaining about it to myself a lot of times for months. But now I just couldn't not say anything this time because it was embarrassingly bad. And I'm glad that this particular instance blew up in their faces and blew up all over the internet because it's like, yo, y'all deserved it. And then they had to put out the unseen footage version again. Like, bro, y'all just shoot it right the first time. Y'all wouldn't have to do that.
I don't think they even waited 12 hours. And then it was boom, boom. The next morning, it was like up on their Twitter.
Right. And it's like, bro, y'all did the same thing when AJ Styles debuted because you didn't shoot AJ Styles. I didn't shoot the words phenomenal coming up on the screen, which is that was supposed to be the payoff. Not Roman Reigns'
confused,
him being dumbfounded. It was, you're supposed to shoot the Jumbotron, and the Jumbotron's supposed to say phenomenal. And that was supposed to be the moment everybody went, AJ Styles is here. Instead, you shot Roman Reigns' face, and he goes, huh? Which is, I mean, I'm not mad that he did that. And that could have been the shot you had after you showed phenomenal right. pop-up. Either way, you gotta do better at that. You gotta do better at that.
It's maddening because I still, you know, I enjoy watching classic wrestling from like the early 90s, mid 90s. They were great too. You know, the 80s, and the way it's shot is so different, and they have improved in a lot of areas in shooting wrestling shows, but that is something that has really brought it down. You know, it does make it feel less than, you know, not Bush League, but like less than Hollywood, less than what they want to strive for. And like you said, it's not the first time it's happened. And, you know, they're consistently getting caught on these things. And what really cracked me up, and I had tagged you on Twitter, was when Undertaker threw Mankind off Hell in a Cell. And
hey!
The caption was like what that would look like today in WWE. And before, like, you see Undertaker throw Mankind from the aerial view, and as Mankind's going down, you see like a crowd shot. It's like tables, like, and then you just see Mankind laying on the ground.
Don't see him going through the table. You just see him halfway through the air. They cut away to show people, and then he's like lying. Like
That is my favorite meme right now on Twitter because there's a ton of them, and it just cracks me up.
WWE would certainly, and I'm not saying this as an exaggeration, WWE would certainly take a cut during the fall. Like, I'm pretty sure if we look back at Shane McMahon's fall off the cell, they cut. And it's like, bruh, you know what's going to happen here. Line up your shot, get your shot, stay on it so you don't miss anything. When you cut away, to even if it's another shot of him falling, you risk missing something. It's a split second, and when it's live, that's all you got. You got one take, and if you miss it, it's gone. But they were cut in the middle of it. When back in '98, they didn't. You just saw Mick Foley fall through the air and hit the ground splat, and that was it. Then they made cuts.
Yeah,
that together.
Now I wonder. I'm gonna go back and see on the WWE Network this Rumble to see if they actually incorporated, if they edited it, you know, Edge's spear to the footage they showed on Twitter, you know, the next day, because they could absolutely do that too. They can, with the criticism they're receiving, they could go back and edit that live shot on the network and plug that in there as like, and maybe it would be like a new upload. Maybe it's not even worth it to them to do it, but I might try to see if it really got to them that badly. Maybe George Barrios was to blame.
maybe he was in a protection stunt all of a sudden. But that's a big annoyance. The constant zooms when people are punching or kicking or something like that, that's annoying.
Yes.
Shaky cam, this is years in the making. This ain't nothing new. I cannot stand when they shake the camera around when people are brawling. It's like they don't expect people to be fighting or brawling on a wrestling show. So it's like, You're supposed to react. This is supposed to be chaos in your mind. Like, to them, this is chaotic. So you got to to show you that this is chaos. They got to shake the camera. Like, bro, it makes me dizzy. Like, I don't need you to shake the camera to kind of let it sink in how chaotic this is. Just show them fighting each other. I don't need to. Whoa, shaky cam. Right. We don't know where to shoot. Like, bro, people have been fighting on your show like this for 30 years. If y'all don't know how to shoot it at this point, what the hell have y'all been doing? If y'all people don't know what to do.
No, people are tuning in for stories that interest them. They're not tuning in for freaking camera shakes and zoom ins and zoom outs. So I don't know why they changed it the way it's shot. But that's not why people tune in. So
right.
You're making people tune out because like of that. It's undue criticism. Like, it's not needed, and you're making it worse.
WWE does this, but there's no evidence that it actually works. There's no evidence that anyone actually likes it. There's not like they got not like they can like show you tangible evidence. Like, we got 13 Grammys, not Grammys, that's music. 13 Emmys. Like, we've got all these Emmys lined up showing you like somebody likes it. We've got plenty of awards to show you that this works. They don't. That's the craziest part about it to me. They do all these little dumb things that no one else does, by the way. You know, the way from down to the way people watch television on SmackDown or Raw. Like, when they look at a monitor, they're looking at it from the side. Or when they're on camera, they're, like, kind of standing, like, side by side together. They're not looking at each other face to face. They kind of, like, are facing the camera, but their heads are looking at each other. And it's like, you do these little weird things that don't help you at all. Like, it doesn't make your show better. Like, no one is watching WWE TV and going, you know, man, I just like the look and feel of it. Like, no one says that. No critic, no fan, no one says, I just like the way it looks and feels. Like, I'm trying to think of a show like the show, what was the name of the show that came out about the nuclear disaster?
Chernobyl.
Why can't I forget the name of the show? It's where the thing happened. The way that show looked and it was shot, and that's just and it's different because it's not live television. It's a miniseries, but that's something where people go like, "Yo, I just love the way it looks. I love the way it's shot." Like, no, like critics would say that, and other people I've talked to personally, just me personally. I mean, it's not everybody, obviously, but people who are into cinematography and stuff like that, like they like, "Yo, the way it is shot is beautiful." Blah blah blah. No one would say that about WWE. They'd say, yo, the camera shakes too much, they zoom in and out too much, they cut too much, and why do people watch the monitors like that? Like, why do people do that? Those little things that WWE does, you would think that they would do it because it's proven to succeed. Like, it's proven that people like this, and this is how people want to digest their product. It's not! Like, we watched for years and years a different way, and in the last like 10 years or so, maybe even 15, they completely changed this other thing, and all that's happened is the ratings are going down. Like you say, the ratings are going up. Like, nothing is this hasn't helped any. So why have they done it for so long? It's beyond me. This is like a head coach of a sport that they've been fired years ago. There's no results to show that this works. Like, it doesn't. There's no tangible evidence. No Emmys, no nothing. Not even regional Emmys. Nothing. Nothing to show that this is good. But yet y'all do it.
Yeah, I feel like when they switched to HD is kind of like when they started experimenting with these different camera things, because that was like in 2008 when they started broadcasting in HD, and that's kind of the whole when PG came back and all this, and it just became a different product than, you know, I really enjoyed 2004 through 2007. I thought it was good stuff. The storylines were okay. There was nothing that was like as embarrassing, made me embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. And there was no stupid camera cuts. And, you know, I think once they went to HD is when I started the whole production started feeling more Hollywoodish. And they started, you know, with these guest hosts and all that. So I think like maybe around that time is when it started. And that was like 12 years ago. That's ridiculous. That's too long to be dealing with this. And I think just recently, maybe within the last 3 or 4 years is when we really started kind of hammering home the fact that this sucks. You know, I don't want to watch wrestling like this. It sucks.
It's really more striking for me now because when I used to write recaps at Philly.com, I was watching the show intently every week. So I didn't really like have time to complain or like something like that, like, or notice. I just got used to it so much that I just stopped noticing it. But since I've not done it week to week, I've watched a lot of shows, but I don't watch as intently as I used to. And obviously, I watch a lot of other things. I watch Netflix. I watch Amazon Prime. Like, I don't just watch nothing but wrestling all the time. And then when I come back to Raw or SmackDown, it's like, bruh, this is even more jarring than any, like, you watch any other sporting, live sporting event or live event in general, none of it is shot that way. Football, basketball, baseball, MMA, boxing, where there are people fighting each other. It's not shot that way. I don't understand why WWE feels the need to do that. I understand that maybe some of it is to cover up the fact that it's the punches aren't landing necessarily, but people know this stuff ain't real. Like, you don't have to kill the rest. You don't get to kill your product with 20,000 camera cuts to protect the business all of a sudden. Now, WWE so worried about protecting the business when they do so many other things. Man, that
especially
don't
when their network, has programs that completely expose it.
Right.
Like, that's so stupid.
And they do so many other things on their actual shows to expose the business other than the punches. So I can't even buy that if that's the reason. But another thing that really bugs me now in last like 2 years about WWE, they've started introducing these like AR experiences during the entrances. And now almost every wrestler has them. The AR graphics that they have in the arena, if like Roman Reigns comes out.
Oh,
like,
on the TV screen,
Alexa Bliss or Nikki Cross. It's like the two crazy looking heads. Or like...
See, that I don't have much of a problem with. I think that's, whatever, but...
I don't like them because I don't think they look... The one that had the Royal Rumble, Roman Reigns? What the hell was that? It was Roman Reigns screaming.
That was
weird. What happened to the dog?
That was weird.
To me, they're weird because they do them every week. They're not unique anymore. They're not... The luster is going. When they did it at WrestleMania for the first time, and I'm like, okay, maybe this is the only time, or only on pay-per-views. Right. For me, that would be... I tolerate it more... But when you do them every week and you do that same sweeping shot under the dog every single week for Roman Reigns, or the same thing for Alexa Bliss, the same shots, it's the same thing. And when somebody's making their way to the ring, they make sure that they cut away from that person, again, cutting away, to show this thing. It just seems shoehorned in unnecessarily. We don't care about that stuff. I don't think they took a survey and fans really said, we want more of this. And if they took a survey now and asked fans, hey, would you stop watching if we didn't have these? Most of the people said, no, I'm going to keep watching. I don't give a damn. Like, Steve Austin was white hot. They didn't have a skull in the middle of the ring. Obviously, the technology wouldn't support that back then. But it wasn't necessary. That's my point. It's not necessary to do it.
Yeah, and I agree. It's not necessary.
They take the camera off your star and Roman Reigns to show this AR virtual reality dog. And if those don't know AR, it's augmented reality. So, for example, if people remember like the Baltimore Ravens, they had the thing where the Raven was flying around the stadium. That was really cool. Or people do AR where like we did it with the Eagles at the Eagles Autism Challenge where you could shoot the metal and something will come out of the metal and it's like a message or something like that. And that's not like a brand new thing, but WWE discovered it a couple years ago and was like, we should do this all the time. Get as many of these as possible. We'll do them all the time. Like, The Miz has his thing, and they shoot at the same shot. And it's just, to me, they don't use them right. And it's the same sweeping little shot with the boom camera and all that. Yep. And meanwhile, you're cutting away from your star. Keep the camera on the star. Keep the camera on the person that I came to see. I don't care about this virtual reality dog thing. The thing is, WWE probably spent a ton of money on them. So they're like, look, even if it ruins like the shots or ruins the entrance, damn it, we got to shoot them because we spent a lot of money. We got to get our money's worth on them. But it's like, I'd much rather just see Bayley walk to the ring or Sasha Banks or whoever. Like, I don't care to see the snake, the viper, or Randy Orton or any. There's a tunnel for Shinsuke Nakamura. It's like a red tunnel. What is that?
I guess they have to feel like, hey, we're a big production company too. We're not just wrestling, and they gotta put it in there. Like, for young impressionable kids that think WWE is like the greatest technological company in the world.
No one else does that. When we watch the Super Bowl Sunday, you might see that on the field, and WWE does this when they come in and out of breaks, they'll have like the match graphic. Like, we're back here on SmackDown, and right now it's Shorty Gable versus Sheamus, and there's like a little graphic in the arena. You see that on football games, see that on basketball games, or when they do like a sponsor thing. This match is presented by Progressive, and it's like the little thing in the crowd. That makes sense to me. Do that. Obviously, it's a sponsorship. It's a different way to present your sponsor. Yep. A cool way to present your sponsor. I'm cool with that. It's only once or twice a show. And then when you come out of breaks, that's like once or twice a show. I'm good with that. That's perfectly fine. But let's say you watch the Super Bowl Sunday, and let's say the Chiefs are running onto the field. They're not going to force in a Chiefs logo and shoot and sweep under it, something like that, just to say, hey, we look at this, because it's not necessary.
Right.
It's not even actually there. Like, who cares? Who cares?
The funniest part, I think, was the first time Asuka's had one of those things, and it was like the mask. And somebody texted me asking me if those were hanging up in the arena.
But the problem is, they'll shoot the mask more than they'll shoot Asuka.
Yeah.
Like, they'll keep it on the mask for like a good 10, 15 seconds. Like, bruh, where's Asuka? I don't care about this. Like, this is not necessary.
And I can't remember if that was last year or the year before. But yeah, they texted me. They're like, is that really hanging up in the arena? And I had to double check to make sure, because that was one of the first times they used that augmented reality.
You know, damn well that wasn't in the arena. Come on, man. It costs enough money to get it virtually in the ring. What are they actually hang it up and change it every match?
Hey, man, they hang that stupid WrestleMania sign every year, so you never know. And now it's like, for some reason, it looks so much bigger.
It does look huge, doesn't it?
I don't know if they have it closer to the center of the ring or if it's just a bigger sign in general, but I feel like looking at it, that it's blocking somebody's view from like the nosebleeds.
I saw it on Raw, like that thing is gigantic. Like, it's massive.
What I haven't seen yet on Twitter is like somebody from behind it taking a picture to see just how much space it takes up. So I'm waiting for that.
You would hope.
I want to see just how big it is.
It's hung high in the arena, and most people are looking down, so it shouldn't. It should not block your view. It shouldn't obstruct your view. But it'd be interesting to see if that has happened though. But typically,
it'll be at the Wells Fargo Center. Coming up.
They're going to be in parts, right? So,
the Elimination Chamber.
I forgot all about that, but...
Yeah, me too, and I'm not going.
I'm going to try to get some tickets, because my daughter... I took my daughter to SmackDown
back in... Even though I'm not... October, right?
Yeah, I took my daughter to SmackDown in October, and I'm going to... She's been begging me, like, oh, when are they coming back? Like, where can we go? We need to go next week. I'm like, Gabby, they're not here next week. Like, they come like twice a year, because me and her watch SmackDown together all the time. Because she likes wrestling now. I'm getting her into wrestling. So she always asks me, oh, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? I'm like, the person with the the person kicking the other person in the face is a good guy, actually.
My nephew's getting into it too. I do the NWO sign every time. That's our high five to each other. So
exactly. Yeah. You're raising them right. That's what you got to do.
Right.
I don't know why I'm subjecting my daughter to this terrible production, but it is what it is. I mean, again, she don't care. Like, she don't...
Right.
It's nothing. It's not necessary. And, like, she looks at it and goes, ooh, that looks cool.
And the funny thing is, if I was a kid now, engrossed in wrestling the way I was, you know, in the early 90s, I would think it's cool, too. And in, like, 10, 20 years... when WWE's not doing this stuff, I'm like, man, bring that back. Bring that augmented reality back.
Please don't. But it's the thing. My daughter sees it. She doesn't react to it at all. It just, again, to me, unnecessary. I spent all this money probably to get these graphics made, and they're pointless. All they do is just take me out of what I want to see, just so y'all can show off your fancy shot that won't get y'all any critical acclaim. Like, no one cares. No one's going to say, man, WWE is doing this stuff right, man. That, look at this shot right here of this dog. And they sweep under the dog or this beast-looking thing from Brock Lesnar. They show this thing. It looks huge. And they showed a sweeping shot under it. Look at all these masks. Like, wow. Like, you know, WWE, they don't do everything right, but they got this right. No one says that. No one says that. Stop it, WWE. Y'all can do better. Y'all are better than that. That's the thing. That's the thing that kills me. I know WWE is capable of more. They're capable of better. They got very talented people working for them behind the scenes. Those people aren't slouches. It's just the style that they work under and they work with that they decided. Then no one told them to do this. These are all WWE's decisions. It's not like the trend of television told them, dictated to them, this is what people like. This is how people are consuming television these days. That's not what happened. This is all WWE making an autonomous decision to do these weird quirks with their production, and it honestly, it sometimes ruins it. It takes you out of it. Another thing, oh my God, another thing that annoys me to the nth degree, and they started this like maybe 5-6 years ago, is when something is happening backstage, and for whatever reason, they cut away from that and show the Titantron. They'll show them talking on the Titantron. So let's say it's Firefly Funhouse and Bray Wyatt's talking and doing his thing. They'll cut away to in the arena and they'll sweep in front of the Jumbotron and show him talking in the arena. And they'll show people looking at the Jumbotron. It's like, why? What is the point of that? What for what? I would love to hear their logic behind that. Because for years and years, backstage segments happened. And we didn't need to be taken out of that moment to show it taking place in the arena as well. All you're doing is taking me out of what's happening right now. You're showing me Firefly Funhouse, which is, in essence, I'm supposed to be immersed in this strange, bizarre experience. But you're taking me out of that immersion for no real reason. Just to sweep across and show the Jumbotron and everybody looking up at it. And it's like, why?
It's so
like, weird. I can't think of a good reason why they do that. It doesn't make any sense to me. But they do it. I mean, every single week.
Maybe for the viewer at home to see what the viewer in the audience is seeing, but we don't care. I don't care what the viewer in the audience is watching because we're both watching the same damn thing. So why do I care from their vantage point? That's the only reason I can think of why they would like a shot like that. It's stupid.
Right. It's like, right? Again, I hate to use Super Bowl as an example. Like, when the teams make the entrances, right, they'll show the video, and they'll be like, we are the AFC champion, Kansas City Chiefs. It'll be like, during the middle of that video package that you're seeing live on television, and they're showing all their season highlights and the highs and lows and whatever, what got them to this point. You know, you used to know a video I'm talking about where they show this video, and then the team runs into the field after that. It's like, in the middle of that video, the NFL cuts away and shows it playing in the arena.
Yeah.
Like, bro, or in the stadium, I should say. Like, bro, I was into that video. That video y'all made was pretty epic. But now you showed a shot of the stadium instead of this video. I want to see this video. Like, this video is cool.
Yeah.
Like, but it wouldn't make sense for them to do it. It doesn't make sense for WWE to do it. It's just another little quirk that they do and that they have. It's just senseless. Like, that's the part that kills me the most. It's that, yeah, there are things that happen in life that I may not agree with. But there might be some logic behind it, some sound reason behind it that I may not agree with that, but at least there's something behind it. And maybe there is in WWE, we just don't know it, but it just trying to think really hard about it on my own, I got nothing. So why, WWE, tell me why y'all do the things that y'all do sometimes with y'all production. Don't understand it.
Maybe we'll, I was hoping, you know, SmackDown on Fox, we would see some production changes, but it's the same damn thing, and it sucks.
Nothing different. Terrible. And you can tell they teach it to all their wrestlers, to everyone. And if you don't do it, you're probably going to get, you know, chewed out.
Chewed out, yeah.
Probably going to get in trouble. So they teach it, and they beat it into their brains, like, this is the way you have to do it.
Yep. And if you don't post here on that X, then your push is done. Like,
right.
Come on, man.
But why? I wonder if anyone has ever asked why. Maybe they're too afraid to, because they're afraid that Vince McMahon or whoever is going to be like, don't question me and what I want you to do. Right. Do it.
And but the answer could just be as simple as because Vince said so. And that's a terrible answer.
Maybe that's it. It is. That is a terrible answer. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. I wish I could make sense of it. I can't. And it frustrates. And it makes watching WWE's programming
very hard.
Which could already be tough. It can be tough as it is, just from the subject matter, from the creative. But then on top of that, y'all got these weird production quirks. This is like, what am I watching right now?
I'll tell SmackDown. I think the last few weeks have been a little better in terms of the program, and Raw's been pretty good for a while. So at least I'm feeling better about the content of the show, but definitely the production and the way it's being shot and that type of stuff needs to change, because people do pay attention to it. It's not just the storylines that people are paying attention to, not just the angles. It's everything. And I think the criticism's getting louder and louder with respect to how they're shooting their shows. And this is a perfect example of it this past weekend. This is you know, Raw Monday and SmackDown the night, like, it's a perfect example of people just getting fed up with, you know, their production and how they do things. Just make it a wrestling show, or shoot it the way you would back in the 2000s.
Just use common sense. Just use common sense. When you see somebody like Edge running into the ring, that's not the time to cut to a crowd shot. Even if you cut to a different shot, make it a shot of the ring. Just use common sense.
Yeah, like whatever happened to that aerial view? And I know it's hard, you know, in a baseball stadium to have that aerial view, somebody of the ring when a new entrant's coming down. But maybe do something with that. Have like a, you know, they have those, what are they called? The things that carry the cameras on the, I forget what they're called. They're on like these rigs or something.
Yeah.
And they move around. Yeah, like, why not have one of them just kind of pan over the ring when Edge comes in? You can have like a corner shot of the near the far side ring post, and you see him come on the other side and just spear the guy. That would be a cool shot, you know, if you needed to change a shot. Not the crowd. And we've gotten some funny ass gifs of crowd shots over the years. But that's not why they do it. You know, they don't do it so we can get funny gifts. The Miz, when The Miz won the world title, that girl in the audience, like, that's one of the funniest things ever. But it didn't happen in the middle of a pin, you know? Like, so that's the timing needs to be better. If you're going to do crowd shots, like, I don't think we're necessarily saying don't do crowd shots. We're saying the timing needs to be fine-tuned, because it's happening way too often in the middle of something that we need to see.
Yeah, and it's happened. Edge's entrance wasn't the first time that it's happened. Like you said,
that was the point where I think, and not just you, but I saw your tweets and I kind of chuckled to myself. I was like, man, Vaughn's gonna have a lot to say about this one on the pod, because it was Edge coming back after 9 years, and if you can't get that right,
that's awesome moment to hear his music. He comes out, they cut like 30 times in that 20 seconds, but then that shot of him walking out of the smoke and his eyes and the look on his face, I'm so glad they at least held that shot.
Right.
That was the emotion coming across. Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see that emotion coming across. I can hear the crowd. I can tell the crowd is going nuts. Like, I don't need to see them going nuts. I want to see Edge. And I think they shot people in the ring, right? Did they shoot people in the ring, like, reacting? Which I think they did. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Even if that was the case, also not necessary. Like, keep it on Edge. I don't need to see how the guys are reacting in the ring. Keep it on Edge for the most part. Just let a shot linger. Like,
and it wasn't even like he was, what, the 21st entrant. So
I think it was 21. You know,
make that moment.
Right.
Brock was gone. Like,
let it sink in.
Yeah. Like,
let it linger. There's nothing wrong with letting that shot linger. And, you know, sometimes it's okay. And sometimes you can let Michael Cole lay, like, instead of him laying out on, like, when somebody's getting heat, that's the time when he should actually turn it up and be admonishing the heel. Something like that happens. Maybe he gets his little call in. And then he lays out. Instead, he's, oh my, which we always hear. Could it be? He needs, Michael Cole, you are too talented to have the same surprise call every single time. Yeah. Oh my! Like, we've heard it 30 million times. Please change it up. Please, I'm begging you. Could it be? It is! And then he goes into, like, all the stats that he has, which is like, bro, how do you have all these numbers ready when you know for, he's supposed to be a surprise. But whatever.
Yeah.
So lay out then and just let that crowd tell the story. Let his face tell the story. Not the crowd's faces and not Michael Cole's voice. Like, I want to hear the fans' voices and Edge's face, and let that tell the story.
You know, one of the last times WWE has let a crowd tell the story is when Daniel Bryan turned on the Wyatt family and beat up Bray Wyatt in the cage. Because there was, like, no commentary after. And, you know, once that whole thing started, I think there was like 3 or 4 words that were spoken from Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. They just let that whole thing just play out. They let the crowd take over, and it was amazing. I think Jerry Lawler said like, Daniel Bryan is back, you know, and that was it, you know, and it wasn't in a moment of where it took over anything. He let that play out. That's what I want to get back to. And that was in 2014. That was 6 years ago, because it was in January of 2014. I cannot believe it's been 6 years since that moment. One of my favorite Raw moments of all time.
How did you mention that?
That's exactly what we're talking about when you're just saying, like, let something breathe, let the crowd take over.
Now that you mention that, I just felt really old, because I remember that like it was yesterday, and it exactly. was 6 years ago already.
Yeah.
Like, that felt like yesterday when I was watching that. And then a couple weeks later, or maybe it's a week or two later, the Occupy Raw stuff happened.
Yeah.
That stuff was great. That was great stuff right there. And that was now 6 years ago? Good Lord. Time has flown by.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Like, that is crazy to think about. But time has flown by on our podcast, on this episode of the podcast.
That's right.
Which means it is time to wrap it up for episode 224. So, Nick, take us out with some plugs, please.
You can follow me at Nick Bacone on Twitter. Follow us at Shooters Radio. And we are on Facebook at facebook.com/TheStraightShooters. And listen to Fox Sports The Gambler on iHeartRadio. Download the app. And you can also check out PhillyInfluencer.com.
Well, I am at Vaughn M. Johnson on Twitter. If you can't find me there, you can probably find me out here in these streets, even though it's getting a little bit colder. It's not that cold, but a little bit. It's not that cold, though, for some reason. Just getting me a little, you know, a little weird feeling.
I'm okay with it.
It should be a little colder in Philadelphia in January, but whatever. You also find us on every podcast app you can find us on, possibly find us on, like I said, including SoundCloud or Spotify. And of course, we're also on Patreon, patreon.com/shootersradio, where you can subscribe to some exclusive content for the nominal fee of $1.99. So for Nick Bacone, I'm Vaughn Johnson. Thanks for listening to episode 224 of The Straight Shooters, and we'll catch y'all again next week.
Peace.